Chapter 31. Red Wax. The sound of the black gelding's hooves was all but swallowed in the noise of Amador as Eamon Valda rode slowly through the crowded streets. Sweat oozed from his every pore, the more for his perfectly polished mail and breastplate, gleaming despite a layer of dust, and the snowy cloak spread over the gelding's powerful rump. Yet it might have been a fine spring day for all the notice he took. He did his best to ignore the dirty men and women, even children, with lost expressions and travel-worn clothes. Even here. For once in his life, the great stone walls of the Fortress of the Light, towered and bannered and impregnable, bastion of truth and right, did not lift his spirits. Dismounting in the main courtyard, he tossed his reins to a child with graded instructions for caring for the animal. The man knew what to do, of course, but Valda wanted to snap at something. White-cloaked men scurried everywhere in a great show of energy despite the heat. He hoped there was something more than show behind it. Young Dane Bornhald came trotting across the courtyard, pressing fist to mailed chest in an eager salute.
"The light illumine you, my lord captain. You had a good ride from Tar Valon, yes?"
His eyes were bloodshot and a smell of brandy wafted from him. There was no excuse for drinking during the day.
"Fast, at least," Valda growled, jerking off his gauntlets and stuffing them behind his sword belt.
It was not the brandy, though he would make a mark against the man for it. The journey had been fast for that distance. He intended to give the Legion a night in the city by way of reward once they finished making camp outside the city. A fast journey, but he disapproved of the orders that called him back, just when a strong push might have toppled the crippled tower and buried the witches under the rubble. A ride to be remarked, yet every day had brought worse news. Althor and Camelin. It did not really matter whether the man was a false dragon or the real one. He could channel, and any man who did that had to be a dark friend. Dragon-sworn rabble in Altara. This so-called prophet and his scum in Gieldan, in Amadisia itself. He had managed to kill some of that filth, at least, though it was hard-fighting foes who melted away more often than they stood, who could blend into the accursed streams of refugees, and worse, of brainless wanderers who seemed to think Althor had turned all order on its head. He had found a solution, however, if not a completely satisfactory one. The roads behind his legion were littered now, and the ravens fed to bursting. If it was not possible to tell the prophet's trash from refugee trash, well then, kill whoever clogged the way. The innocent should have remained in their homes where they belonged. The Creator would shelter them anyway. As far as he was concerned, the wanderers were added plums on the cake.
"I heard in the city that Morghese is here," he said.
He did not believe it. Every other word in Andor had been speculation over who killed Morghese, so he was startled when Dane nodded. Surprise turned to disgust as the young man babbled about Morghese's apartments and her hunting, how well she was treated, how she was sure to sign a treaty with the children any day. Valda scowled openly. He should have expected no better from Niall. The man had been one of the best soldiers in his time, accounted a great captain. But he grew old and soft. Valda had known that as soon as his orders reached Tar Valon. Niall should have moved on Tyr in strength with the first word of Althor. He would have gathered all the numbers he needed on the march. Nations would have rallied to the children against a false dragon. They would have then. Now Althor was in Camelin, and strong enough to frighten the faint-hearted. But Morghese was here. If he had Morghese, she would sign that treaty the first day if somebody had to guide her hand to hold the pen. By the light, he would teach her to leap when he said leap. If she balked at returning to Andor with the children, he would lash her to a staff by her wrists. That would be a banner to lead the advance into Andor. Dane ran down, waiting, no doubt hoping for an invitation to dinner this evening. As a junior, he could not issue one to an officer senior to him, but doubtless he hoped to talk with his old commander, about Tar Valon, perhaps even about his dead father. Valda had not thought much of Jefferon Bornhald. The man had been soft.
I will see you at the camp for dinner at 6. I will see you sober, child Bornhold.
Bornhold surely was in drink. He gaped and stammered before making his salute and going. Valda wondered what had happened. Dane had been a fine young officer, one who worried too much over niceties, such as proof of guilt when there was no way to obtain it, yet still fine for all that. Not as weak as his father. Ashamed to see him waste himself in brandy. Muttering under his breath, officers drinking in the very Fortress of the Light was another sign that Niall was rotting at the core. Valda went in search of his rooms. He intended to sleep in the camp, but a hot bath would not be amiss. A square-shouldered young child approached in the plain stone corridor, the scarlet shepherd's crook of the Hand of the Light, behind the flaring golden sun on his chest. Without stopping, or even looking at Valda, the questioner murmured respectfully, "My lord captain might wish to visit the Dome of Truth." Valda frowned after the man. He did not like questioners. They did good work in their way, yet he could never escape the feeling that they had donned the crook because that way they would never have to face an armed foe. Started to raise his voice and dress the fellow down, then stopped. Questioners were sloppy in their discipline, but a simple child would never speak idly to a lord captain. Perhaps the bath could wait. The Dome of Truth was a wonder that finally did restore some of his essence. Pure white outside, inside gold leaf cast down the light of 1,000 hanging lamps. Thick white columns ringed the chamber, plain and polished to glistening, but the dome itself stretched 100 paces across unsupported and rose 50 at its peak. Above the simple white marble dais, centered on the white marble floor, where the Lord Captain Commander of the Children of the Light stood to address the assembled children in their most solemn moments, their most serious ceremonies. He would stand there one day. Niall would not live forever. Dozens of children wandered about the vast chamber. It was a sight worth seeing, though none but the children ever did, of course. Yet that message had not come so he could admire the dome. He was sure of it. Behind the great columns ran rows of smaller ones, just as simple and polished just as highly, and tall alcoves where scenes of the children's triumphs made frescoes of 1,000 years. Valda strolled, looking into each recess. Finally he saw a tall, graying man studying one of the paintings, Serenia Latar, being raised on the scaffold, the only Amaralyn the children had ever managed to hang. She had been dead already, of course, live witches being somewhat hard to hang. But that was beside the point. 693 years ago, justice had been done according to the law.
"Are you troubled, my son?"
The voice was soft, almost mild. Valda stiffened slightly. Radha Masunawa might be the High Inquisitor, but he was still a questioner, and Valda was a Lord Captain, anointed of the Light, not my son. "Not that I have noticed," he said flatly. Asunawa sighed. His gaunt face was a picture of martyred suffering, so that his sweat might have been taken for tears, but his deep-set eyes seemed to burn with the heat that had boiled away all his spare flesh. His cloak bore only the crook, no flaring golden sun, as though he stood outside the children, or perhaps above.
"The times are troubled. The Fortress of the Light harbors a witch."
Valda suppressed a wry look before it formed. Cowards or not, questioners could be dangerous even to a Lord Captain. The man might never be able to hang an Amaralyn, but he probably dreamed of being the first to hang a queen. Valda did not care whether Morghese died, provided it was not before all the use was wrung out of her. He said nothing, and Asunawa's thick gray eyebrows drew down until he seemed to peer out of caverns.
"The times are troubled," he said again, "and Niall must not be allowed to destroy the Children of the Light."
For long minutes, Valda examined the painting. Perhaps the artist had been good, perhaps not. He knew nothing of such things, and cared even less. The fellow had gotten the weapons and armor right on the guards, though, and the rope and scaffold looked real. Those were things he knew.
"I am prepared to listen," he said finally. "Then we will talk, my son. Later, when there are fewer eyes to see and ears to hear. The light illumine you, my son."
Asanawa strode away without another word, white cloak billowing slightly and the sound of his boots echoing, as if he was trying to drive every step into the stone. Some of the children bowed deeply as he passed. From a narrow window high above the courtyard, Niall watched Valda dismount and speak to young Bornhold, then stalk away in a fury. Valda was always in a fury. Had there been some means to bring the children home from Tarvalin and leave Valda there, Niall would have jumped at it. The man was a fair enough battle commander, but better suited to rousing mobs. His notion of tactics was the charge, and of strategy, the charge. Shaking his head, Niall made his way to his audience chamber. He had more important things than Valda to concern him. Morghese was still resisting like an army on the heights with water and high morale. She refused to admit she held a valley floor with no way out, and it was her enemy who had the heights. Bulwer rose from his table as Niall entered the anteroom.
"Omerna was here, my lord. He left these for you."
Bulwer touched a sheaf of papers tied with a red ribbon on the table.
"And this."
Thin lips tightened as he drew a tiny bone tube from his pocket. Niall took the tube with a mutter and stumped into the inner room. Omerna was becoming more useless every day for some reason. Leaving his reports with Bulwer was bad enough, nonsense as they were, but even Omerna knew better than to hand one of these tubes with three red stripes to anyone but Niall himself. He held the tube close to a lamp to examine the wax. Unbroken, before his thumbnail pierced it. He would have to light a fire under Omerna, put the fear of the light into him. The fool was no good as a decoy unless he played the consummate spymaster as far as he was able. The message was from Varadin again, Niall's private cipher in that mad, spidery scrawl on a strip of thin paper. He almost burned it unread, and something at the end caught his eye. Beginning at the beginning, he consciously worked the cipher in his mind. He wanted to be absolutely sure. Just as before, it was gibberish about Aes Sedai on leashes and strange beasts, but right at the last, Varadin had helped Asadim Faizar find a hiding place in Tanchico. He would try to smuggle Faizar out, but the Forerunners kept such a guard that a whisper could not pass the walls without permission. Niall rubbed his chin in thought. Faizar was one of those he had sent to Taraban to see if anything could be salvaged. Faizar knew nothing of Varadin, and Varadin should know nothing of Faizar. The Forerunners kept such a guard that not a whisper could pass the walls. A madman's scrawl. Stuffing the paper into his pocket, he returned to the antechamber.
Bulwer, what is the latest from the west?
Between them, the west always meant the border with Taraban.
No change from before, my lord. Patrols that penetrate very deeply into Taraban do not return. The worst trouble near the border is refugees trying to cross.
Patrols that penetrated too deeply. Taraban was a pit, writhing with poisonous vipers and rabid rats, but
how quickly could we get a courier to Tanchico?
Bulwer did not even blink. The man would not show surprise if one day his horse spoke to him.
The problem will be fresh horses once he crosses the border, my lord. Normally, I would say 20 days there and back, perhaps a few less with luck. Now, twice that with luck. Maybe twice that just to reach Tanchico.
A pit that could swallow a courier and not even leave bones behind. There would be no need for a return, but Niall kept that to himself.
Let it be arranged, Bulwer. I will have a letter ready in an hour. I will speak to the courier myself.
Bulwer bowed his head in assent, but dry-washed his hands at the same time, insulted. Let him be. There was a small chance this could be done without exposing Varadin. Unnecessary precaution, if he was insane, of course. But if not, revealing him would not make anything happen faster. Back in the audience chamber, Niall studied Varden's message once more before holding the slip in a lamp flame, watching it catch. He crumpled the ash between his fingers. He had four rules concerning action and information. Never make a plan without knowing as much as you can of the enemy. Never be afraid to change your plans when you receive new information. Never believe you know everything, and never wait to know everything. The man who waited to know everything was still sitting in his tent when the enemy burned it over his head. Niall followed those rules. Only once in his life had he abandoned them to follow a hunch. At Jamara, for no reason but a tickling at the back of his head, he had set a third of his army to watch mountains all said were impassable. While he maneuvered the rest of his forces to crush the Mirandians and Daltarans, an Ilioner army that was supposed to be 100 miles away came out of those impassable passes. The only reason he managed to withdraw without being crushed was a feeling. And now he felt that tickling again.
"I do not trust him," Talanvor said firmly. "He reminds me of a young sharp I saw at the fair once, a baby-faced fellow who could look you in the eye and grin while he was palming the pea from under its cup." For once, Morgaze had no difficulty holding her temper. Young Piter had reported that his uncle had finally found a way to smuggle her out of the Fortress of the Light, her and the others. The others had been the rub. Torwin Barshaw had claimed himself able to get her out alone long since, but she would not leave them behind to the mercies of the White Cloaks. Not even Talanvor. "I will make a note of your feelings," she said indulgently. "Just do not let them hinder you. Do you have a saying that fits, Lini? Something for young Talanvor and his feelings?" Light! Why did she take such delight in taunting him? He came close to treason, but she was his queen. Not... the rest of the thought would not come. Lini sat near the windows, rolling a ball of blue yarn from the skein Brianna held stretched on her hands. "Piter minds me of that young undergroom just before you went to the White Tower, the one who got two maids with child and was caught trying to sneak away from the manor with a sackful of your mother's plate." Morgaze's jaw hardened, but nothing could spoil her pleasure. Not even the glance Brianna gave her, as if she should be allowed to state her opinion as well. Piter had been overjoyed at Morgaze's impending escape. Of course, part of that was because he apparently expected some sort of reward from his uncle for his part. At least a few of his comments suggested it, something about making up for a failure back home. But the young man practically danced when she agreed to the plan that would have them all out of the fortress today, and out of Amador by sunrise tomorrow. Away from Amador and on the road to Gildan, where soldiers would not come with strings to tie to Andor. 2 days ago, Barshaw himself came to unfold the scheme, disguised as a shopkeeper delivering knitting needles and yarn, a squat, big-nosed man with a choleric eye and a sneering mouth, though the words came out respectfully enough. It was hard to believe him Piter's uncle. They looked so different. Much less a merchant. Still, his plan was a marvel of simplicity, if hardly dignified, needing only enough people outside the fortress to make it work. Morgaze was going to ride out of the Fortress of the Light, buried in the bottom of a cartload of kitchen refuse. "Now you all know what to do," she told them. So long as she herself was in her rooms, the rest could move about with considerable freedom. Everything depended on that. Well, not everything, but certainly every escape but her own. "Lini, you and Brianna must be in the laundry yard when the bell sounds high." Lini nodded complacently, but Brianna gave her a purse-lipped look. They had been over this 20 times. Even so, Morgaze was not going to allow a mistake to result in anyone being left behind. "Talanvor, you will leave your sword behind and wait at an inn called the Oak and Thorn." He opened his mouth, but she forestalled him firmly. "I have heard your arguments. You can find another sword. They'll believe you mean to return if you leave it." He grimaced, but finally nodded. "Lam Gwyn is to wait at the Golden Head, and Basil at—" A hasty tap at the door, and it opened enough to admit Basil's balding head. "My queen, there's a man, a child." He glanced over his shoulder into the hall. "There's a questioner, my queen." Talonvor's hands went to his sword hilt, of course, and he would not take them away until she had gestured twice and grimaced at him beside. "Admit him?" She managed a calm voice, but butterflies the size of foxes fluttered frantically in her belly. A questioner? Was everything that suddenly had been going so well about to turn just as suddenly to disaster? A tall, hawk-nosed man pushed Basil out of the way and closed the door in his face. The white and gold tabard with the crimson crook on his shoulder gave his rank as Inquisitor. She had not met Einor Saren, but he had been pointed out to her. There was a set of unalterable certainty to his face. "You are summoned to the Lord Captain Commander," he said coldly. "You will come now." Morgaze's thoughts raced faster than the butterflies. She was used to being summoned. Niall did not come to her, now he had her in the fortress. Called before the man for another lecture on her duty to Andor, or for what was supposed to be a friendly chat, to show her that Niall had her best interests and Andor's at heart. Used to that, but not to this sort of messenger. If she was being given over to the questioners, there would be no subterfuge. Asunawa would send enough men to drag her away and everyone with her. Him she had met briefly, he made her blood freeze. Why had an inquisitor been sent? She voiced the question and Saren replied in the same icy tones. "I was with the Lord Captain Commander and I was coming this way. I have finished my business and now I will take you back. After all, you are a queen. Due respect." That all sounded slightly bored, somewhat impatient, until the last, when a note of wry mockery entered. No warmth, though. "Very well," she said. "Shall I accompany my queen?" Talonvor bowed formally. At least he made a display of deference when any outsider was around. No. She would take Lamgwyn instead. No, any of the men would make it seem she thought she needed bodyguards. Saren frightened her nearly as much as Asunawa did, and she would not let him catch even a hint of the fact. She put on a casual, tolerant smile. "Surely I need no protection here?" Saren smiled too, or at least his mouth did. He seemed to be laughing at her. Outside, with Basil and Lamgwyn looking at her uncertainly, she almost changed her mind about attendance. She would have, had she not spoken inside. But two men could not protect her if this really was some elaborate trap, and changing her mind would be a show of weakness. Walking through the stone corridors beside Saren, she certainly felt weak, not like a queen at all. No, maybe she would scream like anyone else if the questioners had her in their dungeons. Well, there was no maybe about it. She was not fool enough to believe royal flesh different from any other in that regard. But until then, she would be what she was. Deliberately, she set about flogging down those butterflies. Saren led her into a small flagstone-paved courtyard where bare-chested men were hacking at wooden posts with swords. "Where are we going?" she demanded. "This is not the way I have gone to the Lord Captain Commander's study before. Is he somewhere else?" "I take the shortest way," he replied curtly. "I have more important matters to see to than—" He did not finish. And he did not slow, either. She had no choice but to follow, down a corridor lined with long rooms full of narrow cots and men often bare-chested, or in less. She kept her eyes fixed on Saren's back, composing the blistering sentences she meant to deliver to Niall. Across a stable yard, the smell of horses and dung heavy in the air, and a farrier shoeing horses in one corner, along another barracks hallway, and then one with kitchens down one side, and the thick smell of stew cooking, into another courtyard. She stopped dead. A long, high scaffold stood in the middle of the yard. Three women and over a dozen men filled every space, hands and feet bound, nooses snugged around their necks. Some wept piteously, most only looked terrified. The last two men on the far end were Torwin Barshaw and Piter, the boy in his shirt sleeves instead of the red and white coat she had made for him. Piter was not weeping, but his uncle was. Piter appeared too horrified to think of tears.
"For the light!"
a white cloak officer called out, and another white cloak shoved a long lever at the end of the scaffold. Trapdoors snapped open with loud cracks, and the victims fell from sight. Some of the stretched ropes quivered as those at the end choked their lives away instead of dying quickly from a broken neck. Piter's was one of those, and her fine escape died with him. Perhaps she should have had as much concern for him, but it was the escape she thought of, her way out of the trap she had walked into, herself trapped, and Andor with her. Saren was looking at her, plainly expecting her to faint or sick up. "So many at once," she said, proud of the steadiness in her voice. Piter's rope had stopped jerking. It only swung slowly from side to side now. No escape.
"We hang dark, friends, every day," Saren answered dryly. "Perhaps in Andor you release them with a lecture. We do not."
Morghais met his gaze. The shortest way? So this was Niall's new tactic. It did not surprise her that no mention had been made of her planned escape. Niall was too subtle for that. She was an honored guest, and Piter and his uncle had been hanged by chance for some crime that had nothing to do with her. Who would be the next to mount the gallows? Lamgwyn or Basil? Linny or Talanvor? Strange, but the image of Talanvor with a rope around his neck hurt more than the image of Linny. The mind played peculiar tricks. Over Saren's shoulder she caught sight of Asunawa at a window overlooking the scaffold. He was staring down at her. Maybe this was his doing, not Niall's. It made no difference. She could not let her people die for nothing. She could not let Talanvor die. Very peculiar tricks. Arching an eyebrow mockingly, she said, "If this has unhinged your knees, I suppose we can wait until you find your strength again." A light voice, not affected at all by what she saw. Light, let her not vomit. Saren's face darkened, and he turned on his heel and stalked away. She followed at a stately pace, not looking up at Asunawa's window, trying not to think of the scaffold. Perhaps it really was the shortest way, for in the next corridor Saren led her up steep flights of stairs, delivering her to Niall's audience chamber more quickly than she remembered making the journey before. As usual, Niall did not rise, and there was no chair for her to take, so she was forced to stand before him like a petitioner. He seemed distracted, sitting silent and staring at her, but not really seeing her. He had won, and he did not even see her. That irritated her. Light! He had won! Perhaps she should return to her rooms. If she told Talanvor and Lamgwyn and Basil to carve a path for her, they would try. They would die, and so would she. She had never held a sword, but if she gave that command, she would take one up. She would die, and Elaine would ascend the Lion Throne. She would, as soon as Althor could be pushed from it. The White Tower would see that Elaine got what was hers. The Tower. If the Tower secured the throne for Elaine. It seemed mad, yet she trusted the Tower even less than she did Niall. No, she had to save Andor herself. But the cost. The cost must be paid. She had to force the words out. "I'm ready to sign your treaty." Niall hardly appeared to hear at first. Then he blinked and suddenly laughed wryly and shook his head. That irritated her too, pretending surprise. She had not tried to escape. She was a guest. She wished she could see him on a gallows. He moved into action so quickly that he almost dispelled the memory of his earlier apathy. In moments he had his dried-up little secretary in with a long parchment, everything already written out, and even a copy of the Seal of Andor she could not tell from the original. Choice or no choice, she made a show of reading the terms. They were no different than she had expected. Niall would lead the White Cloaks to regain her throne, but there was a price, if not named as such. 1,000 White Cloaks quartered in Camelon with their own courts of law outside Andorran law in perpetuity. white cloaks to stand equal with the Queen's guards throughout Andor in perpetuity. It might take her lifetime to undo signing this, and Elaine's as well, but the alternative was Al Thor with the Lion Throne as a trophy. If any woman ever sat on it again, it would be Elaenia, or Nian, or one of that ilk, and as Al Thor's puppet. That, or Elaine as the Tower's puppet. She could not make herself trust the Tower. She signed her name clearly, pressed the copied seal into the red wax that Niall's secretary dripped at the foot of the sheet. The Lion of Andor surrounded by the rose crown. There. She was the first queen ever to accept foreign soldiers on Andorran soil. How soon... It was harder to say than she had imagined. How soon will your legions ride? Niall hesitated, glancing down the table. There was nothing there except pen and ink, a sand bowl and a freshly burned down stub of sealing wax, as if he had very recently written a letter. He finished scrawling his signature on the treaty and impressed his own seal, a flaring sun in golden wax, then handed the parchment to his secretary. Put this in the document room, Balwer. I fear I cannot move as quickly as I had hoped, Morghese. There are developments I must consider. Nothing that need concern you. Simply a matter of how best to move in areas unrelated to Andor. I insist you take this as simply more time for me to enjoy your company. Balwer bowed smoothly, if somewhat prissily, yet she was almost certain his eyes nearly jerked toward Niall in surprise. She herself nearly gaped. He pressed her, and now he had other matters to consider? Balwer scurried out as though afraid she might try to snatch back the treaty and tear it up, but that was the furthest thing from her mind. At least there would be no more hangings. The rest would be dealt with when it could be. One step at a time. Her dogged resistance had failed, but now she had time again, an unexpected gift not to be wasted. The pleasure of her company. She put on a warm smile. It seems as though a weight has lifted from my shoulders. Tell me, do you play stones? I am accounted a fair player. His answering smile was surprised at first, then amused. Morghese flushed, but managed to keep her face from showing anger. Perhaps it was best that he thought her broken now. No one watched a broken opponent too closely or regarded them too highly, and if she was careful with time she could begin recovering what she had given away before his soldiers left Amadicia. She had had a very good teacher in the game of houses. I will try not to provide too poor a match, if you would like to play. She was well beyond fair herself, perhaps even beyond good, but she would have to lose, of course, though not so badly that he grew bored. She hated losing.
Frowning, Asinawa drummed his fingers on the gilded arm of his chair. Above his head, the shepherd's crook was worked in brilliant lacquer on a pure white disc. The witch was taken aback, he murmured. Sarn answered as though it was an accusation. Some people are affected that way by hanging. The Dark Friends were rounded up yesterday. I'm told they were chanting some catechism to the Shadow when Trom broke down the door. I checked, but no one thought to ask if they had any connection to her. At least he did not shift his feet. He stood as straight as any hand the light should. Asinawa dismissed explanations with a slight wave of his hand. Of course there was no connection, aside from the fact that she was a witch and they Dark Friends. The witch was in the Fortress of the Light, after all. Still, he was troubled. Niall sent me to fetch her as if I were a dog, Sarn grated. I almost spewed up my stomach standing so close to a witch. My hands wanted her throat. Asinawa did not bother to respond. He hardly heard. Of course, Niall hated the hand. Most men hated what they feared. No, his mind was on Morghese. She was not weak, by all accounts. She had certainly fended off Niall well enough, Most people would have collapsed as soon as they were inside the fortress. She would ruin some of his plans if she turned out to be weak after all. He had all the details in his mind, each day of her trial, with ambassadors on hand from every land that could still produce one, until finally her dramatic confession wrung from her so skillfully no one would ever find a mark. And then the ceremonies surrounding her execution. A special gallows just for her, to be preserved afterwards to mark the occasion.
"Let us hope she continues to resist Niall," he said, with a smile that some would call mild and pious.
Even Niall's patience could not last forever. Eventually, he would have to hand her to justice.